Buddy, you're a boy.
Make a big noise playing in the street.
I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is Nick Anderson, frontman, lead vocalist, and lead guitarist in the Swedish band The Helicopters. Active originally in 1994 to 2008, they reformed in 2016, and this year sees a release of their first album since getting back together called Eyes of Oblivion, and that's due out April the 1st. It features our recent coolest song of the world called Reap a Hurricane. We'll hear a bit of that now, followed by my chat with Nick on our Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. It's Coolest Conversations time, and this is the Mighty Manfred. Joining me today is Nick Anderson, guitarist, vocalist, and a founding member of the Swedish band The Helicopters. They have supplied us with this week's coolest song of the world, Reap a Hurricane, which is off their upcoming album, Eyes of Oblivion. That's due out April the 1st. How are you, Nick?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm doing pretty well overall, I think. I was wondering about yourself and the guys on The Helicopters. Have you been able to keep healthy over the course of the pandemic?
We were doing pretty good. I got COVID like 3 weeks ago, I would say. Yeah, 3 weeks ago. But that was a breeze. I have had my three shots and it was like not even like a cold. So I'm good.
Oh, fantastic. And the other guys, have they managed to, did anybody else get sick at all?
I think I was probably the last one to get COVID. All the other guys did.
All right, then there's no long-lasting effects from any of that.
Well, I think I was the luckiest because it was so, it was not even like a proper cold, But I was lucky. But we're all healthy now, so it's all good.
Great. Well, I was reading online that your favorite band as a kid was Kiss. Is that right?
Well, that's the band that opened my eyes to rock music or rock and roll. I mean, I was into Star Wars, dinosaurs, and Kiss. It makes perfect sense to me.
me as well. I was going to ask you about the Kiss thing because, over the course of your career, I mean, The Helicopters have opened up for the Rolling Stones, and I believe you toured as a member of the MC5 when they did some reunion shows. I know you played with Scott Morgan of the 60s band The Rationals. He was also in the Sonic Rendezvous band. Played with him as The Solution. He's had all sorts of cool music projects, played with all sorts of cool bands. Did you ever play with Kiss?
No way. Well, we opened up for them, but not with Kiss.
Okay, so you got to play with Kiss.
Yes, we shared the stage in 96 when they had the reunion there, which is, it's kind of mind-blowing if you think about it. That's the band that got me into music, and then we're opening up and all that. So that was very cool, I thought.
Well, about that, did you have the opportunity to talk to them at all, or was it, you know, you guys came up and did your set, and then, you know, you have to clear out the stage?
We wanted a photo when they had their full makeup and costume, because that was the only interesting thing, I thought. So we did that, but it was very short and very brief. And Gene Simmons was going to be the usual wise ass, I guess. So he could tell by the looks of us who played what, and he got everyone wrong. You must be the guitar player, and you must be the bass player. And it was all wrong.
Well, speaking of being guitar players and so forth, in the Helicopters, you play guitar and sing, but before the band formed, you were a drummer in the Entombed. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, so what was your first instrument, and when did you start playing it?
I think because I got into Kiss from seeing a picture of them when I was seven, I think. One of those things, you see a picture and then I decided there and then this is the best band in the world. And then it didn't matter how it sounded, really. I just made But I think I was so intrigued with the quantity of Peter Criss's drum kit there, because it was like, I thought he must have had the most toms in the world. So that's what got me into drums. So I think that's how I started. But I realized you can't write songs on drums, so I had to play guitar as well. But that was more of a necessity thing back then.
So when you first started playing drums, I mean, did your parents get you a drum kit? Or how did you? And the second thing is, were you practicing at home?
I first got a plastic toy kit, which wasn't bad noise-wise, I think. But then, they got me a proper kit. So they've been very supportive. But then I had to rehearse somewhere else. So
I can't remember. I think we were talking with Paul Cook of the Sex Pistols, and he said that his parents, you know, had gotten him a drum kit and it was set up in their bedroom. And I thought, wow, that is pretty... Talking about supportive parents, you know, and neighbors, right. He said they were doing that in hopes that, you know, it would keep him out of trouble, but they failed because he was still hanging around Steve Jones.
Yeah, that was all trouble.
So the Helicopters, you actually began as a side project, right?
I don't think we ever wanted to call it a side project. Right. We just wanted to form a band. And I had just happened to have, for the first couple of years, I happened to still be playing with Entombed. And then I quit in 97 to focus more on the Helicopters. But maybe it was a project. I think we were too proud to call it a project. You know? It was a band, man.
All right. Well, so you guys are often described as being a garage band. What does that mean to you? Do you think of yourselves as a garage band? Or?
Well, I think, you know, as any term, that doesn't that depend on who you ask, really?
Well, certainly. And that's sort of this amorphous term I'm trying to get to whether, how do you see that? I mean, to me, a garage band is just sort of an archetype of just a rock and roll band, you know, or just rock and roll music or contemporary rock and roll music. But how do you see it?
I think, I don't know why, but I think when I hear the term garage rock, I think of the Sonics and you know, the American bands that want to sound like the British bands, but they're a little bit more rowdy than that, you know? Like the Brogues and, you know, the Remains. That's the, you know, the reference I have to that. But I guess a garage band could be, that could also be a band that's not mainstream, that plays rock and roll, it's a little bit more underground, I suppose.
So you wear the banner of being a garage band well? I mean, sure, that's a good term for you guys.
I would like to think of ourselves as a rock and roll band. But
yeah, that's
it, what I think. It doesn't really matter. Right. I mean, at the same time, if you say rock today, what the hell does that mean? Is that the same as Nickelback? Because then maybe we're not rock, you know? But it doesn't really matter.
As long as it's rocking.
Yeah, it should be rocking, but preferably it should be rolling a little bit too.
Well, I amen to that. I mean, to me, you know, rock and roll music, like as you're talking about, what does garage mean to me? I make a delineation between like a 60s garage sound.
Yeah.
Only because, you know, contemporary garage rock bands, they don't seem to always draw on that as much as sort of like punk and more like punk sounds, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets into fine hairs with all this. But thinking about the helicopter some more, you were active roughly, I think, like between 94 and 2008 initially.
Yes.
Which is a good run. That's like 14 years. Why did you stop in 2008? Why the hiatus? Why the pause then?
Well, first of all, it wasn't a pause. We broke up.
Because
of quite a few things. I mean, anyone who's been in a band knows that it's kind of like trying to have five relationships at the same time. It's not easy to be in a band, you know. And there were many reasons. We were kind of in a rut, I thought. And also 14 years, isn't that good enough? But then, you know, you have water under the bridge. You get older, maybe a tiny bit wiser. You know, things pass and you know, and then we had the opportunity to play. I mean, I guess they wanted us to play. A lot of festivals were offering us, you know, money for reunion shows quite early after we broke up. And I always thought, oh, but that's ridiculous. We just broke up. And we didn't break up to reform, you know.
Yeah.
But after a while, we just thought, fuck, maybe we should, sorry, should. No, you can't say that either, maybe. We thought, maybe we should give it a go and see what happens, you know, but it has to be good. That was the initial thing, you know. If we're going to do this, it has to be better than it was when we were around. And if we can pull that off, we, you know, let's see what happens. So we did that show in 2016, and it was quite an amazing feeling to see that people seem to have missed us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny, you know, because I'm such a music fan, so it's really hard to picture yourself as someone that people misses. You know, it's like as a band, it's really difficult to get around that, I think. But it was very, very flattering and very amazing. So we just thought, why not keep doing this?
Can you remind us who all is in the current lineup?
We have Dragon on guitar, who I formed the band with back in 94, and Robert, who is the original drummer too. We have Dolph DeBorst on bass.
Okay.
And he used to play, well, he still plays in the Datsuns, and he played with me. Still plays with me in my other band, Imperial State Electric, and we have, of course, Boba on keyboards.
Very cool. I was wondering, was Sammy Afa was in the band briefly?
Yeah, he was in the band in 2017 for that whole summer, which was great. But then he had many other obligations. So that didn't work. So we asked Dolph, because, yeah, like I said, I played with him.
Right.
And we were all in the same city, so that felt like a no-brainer.
So I was looking on your Facebook page, and did you have a member who had passed away about five years ago now? Was it the anniversary of his passing?
Yeah, Robert Dahlquist, Strings, as we called them. Yeah, he sadly passed away. Which is a huge bummer, and it still is.
And how long was he in the group with you before?
He started in 99 and was, you know, with us till we broke up in 2000, mm-hmm. So 9 years.
Well, your last album before you guys broke up is the covers album Head Off. Mm-hmm. And the new album is titled Eyes of Oblivion. We mentioned it's out on April the 1st. And you've been active again now for a few years with the Helicopters. Why did it take so long to come up with a new album?
Well, like I said, we kind of wanted to just see how it felt to play that show. And then we played some more shows the year after.
Right.
And I guess it was around then we started, you know, talking about if we're going to keep doing this, are we doing this to be a nostalgia band kind of thing? Right. And isn't that a little weird? Because we're old, but we're not that old. You know? we didn't feel like that old anyway. So we started approaching the subject of maybe recording a new album, and eventually we did that.
So do most of the songs on the upcoming album, do they predate the pandemic, or were they written over the course of the pandemic?
I would say maybe half of the songs they're kind of old, because I write songs all the time. So when we started trying things out, I showed them some of the stuff I already had lying around. So they are probably maybe 10 years old or so. Mm-hmm. And then some of the other songs were newer. So yeah, I would say half of them has been written during the pandemic.
When and where did you record the album?
Well, that's the thing, because since we wanted to take it, you know, kind of like one day at a time,
right.
We actually started recording 3 years ago. And we did very small bursts of sessions and then huge gaps in between. So I'm in effective studio time, maybe 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
But it took 3 years to finish the damn thing. and I'm never going to record an album like that again, because that sucks. Because you get excited and then you get unexcited because you're not doing anything with it for 3 months. And, you know, I didn't like that.
Yeah. Well, you've worked for many years with your producer, Chips. Is it Keesby? Chips Keesby?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. And can you tell us some about him and your relationship?
Well, we started working with him in 2000 for the album High Visibility. And no, he's great. He's really structured, whereas we're not. So that's a really good good cane to have in a band, yes. Mm-hmm. And he asked, in the beginning, he asked a lot of questions like, so what, you have this riff here. And we're like, yeah, cool, huh? And then he says, why does this run 8 times? Why not? It would be the answer. And then he says, take it off. Just throw it away. But it's such a cool riff. Yeah, but it doesn't do anything for the song, does it? No, but it's kind of cool. Well, that you can do live if you want to, but, you know, focus on the song. So he did that quite a bit on that album. But after that, I mean, I got a little bit grumpy because of it at the mm-hmm. time, but then I realized, of course he's right. You know, if anything that can make a song shorter is good. So by the next album, I kind of knew that, and because he taught me that. So then I think he kind of did less and less, because I was kind of self-producing.
Uh-huh.
But he's really good to keep track of things, you know, that we need to do this. You forgot the tambourine here. Oh, okay. You know? He's very good at that. And he's very good at, you know, getting the best out of the vocals, you know. Whereas, you know, I thought you'd run through the take twice maybe, and that's it. But he made me do it 10 times.
He's like a regular Phil Spector in there working you.
Yeah. And it's like, why the hell do I have to do this 10 times? And, you know, it wasn't that good enough, but of course he's right. The more you do it, then he could compile the best out of it. You know?
Right.
And I think it worked.
So this tune off your upcoming album that is our coolest song in the world this week is Reaper Hurricane. Did you write the song or who wrote it?
I wrote it. I wrote most of the songs on the album. I think that was actually the last song I wrote for the album. which was very fortunate because we didn't have a song that we felt could be an opener of an album. And then I was just lucky. I wrote one, and then I asked the guys, maybe this one? And yeah, that's an opening song.
So is songwriting any different now for you than it was when the band was first active? And I asked that because, like, I know with like Cheap Trick, you know, early on, Rick Nielsen was the songwriter. But over the last, you know, 4 or 5 albums, you know, the other guys are more oftentimes listed as co-writers, or there's a proper just Robin Zander song on there. Are things any different with you guys in songwriting, especially since the band reformed?
No, I think it's pretty much, it's mostly been me. But I think when back before the breakup, Kenny wrote a few of the lyrics too. He was really good at that, I thought. And it's mostly this. It's pretty similar. I think maybe in the very beginning, before I knew how to make a demo, and you know, it's so long ago, I didn't even have a computer, you know. But now you can do anything with GarageBand or whatever app you have on there. And so the difference is that it's easier now to show the other guys the vision you have for a song. Instead of explaining it with words, you can just, you know, this is how I picture this, you know?
Well, so what was your inspiration for Reaper Hurricane?
The song itself?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's tons of inspiration and influences all the time, and it doesn't necessarily have to, you know, end up, you know, in a song that's very, that you could really put the finger on it, you know. It just happens. And this time, I don't know. I think I was just noodling around with the guitar, and I thought, this is a little bit of a Stooges type riff here, and you know, and I don't know. And then it just, you know, it just writes itself almost. I don't know.
Oh, cool. I don't know. The video that I saw for it features you guys outside. It's kind of overcast, gloomy day, smoke or fog is billowing around. First, that made me think of that. What's the Beatles movie, Help? And the guys are outside on the Salisbury Plain, like somewhere around Stonehenge. I'm sorry, what's that?
It's funny you say that, because that's exactly what we talked to the director with. Because he had some idea, and I really love the Help movie.
Yeah.
I watched it probably when I was a kid, when Kenny, the bass player, then had his, because we grew up together, and his dad had that on VHS. So I think I must have seen Help like 30 times. Having no idea what the movie was about, because we didn't know English, but we loved it. So that scene in particular, that's the one that I'm here, the director asked me about, and like, yeah, let's do it, you know. So you're the first one who made that reference. That's fun.
Oh, that is funny, because that's the thing I thought, and then I went back online to see if I was remembering the scene right, you know. But they don't have the proper clip on, because I guess of copyright stuff, but I was pretty sure there was something like that. But in your video, there's like this weird tower sort of in the background.
It used to be, at least, the highest building in Sweden. That's in the middle of Stockholm. It's I think it's kind of a radio tower, but they also have a restaurant upstairs. I was there once when I was a kid. Maybe it's time to revisit that.
Well, what's so funny about that, hearing there's a restaurant up there, because the way it's shot and everything, you think you're just out in the midst of nowhere, except there's this huge tower there. And to think that there are people up there having, you know, their whatever, their meatballs or hamburgers or whatever, looking down into the field. It's like, oh, those guys are out there. What, they're playing music out there, you know?
No, that's right in the middle of Stockholm, actually.
Oh, that is so cool. Well, the new album comes out on April Fool's Day. So April the 1st, we call the 1st of April, April Fool's Day. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with April Fool's Day?
No, we have it in Europe too. It's
okay.
When the record company says, "Oh, we have a date for you," and we're, "Are you kidding?" So we're still not sure if it's going to come out then or not.
Yeah, this is a pretty extensive prank. If that's what you guys are up to, yeah, that's no good. Yeah, so, do you have a favorite April Fool's joke a prank you've ever done or had done to you?
Good question. No, I think I always I'm kind of always forgetting what date it is anyways. So yeah. If anything, probably someone must have pranked me, but I can't think of any right now. These days, there are always some funny ones on the internet, but I forget.
Right. Well, how about this? Like when I were years ago, when we were touring really extensively, you know, we would, was it Blanche DuBois in A Streetcar Named Desire? You would say we were always depending on the kindness of strangers, and we finding places to crash and stuff like that. And I remember one day the drummer and I were down and had spent the night down in this basement, and wherever this house was, they had weights and stuff in mm-hmm. the basement. I mean, it wasn't like an extensive Nautilus machine or anything, but there's just some weights down there and a bench. And so it's time to leave, and I pick up my pack, and it's like, man, this is three times as heavy as I remember it. And then I realized, oh, that SOB, he stuck weights down in there knowing that, you know, it would be extra heavy. Now, did you guys ever do stuff, pull pranks on each other when you were touring?
No, I don't think so. Have we done that? It's funny because if you know, in the band we have Robert, the drummer, who has the best memory out of all of us. So if he was here, we'd probably remember. Of course, we must have done pranks, but no good story coming out of my head at the moment.
Right. Well, we don't want to get you in trouble either. You know, some of those guys may not have figured out that you were behind some of these pranks. And
that's true. Maybe, yeah. Maybe better leave it unsaid there.
Right. Well, thinking about touring, though, are there any plans to come to the U.S. maybe later this year?
It's actually talk about late August. That was in one of the emails I read yesterday. But you know how it is these days. You can plan, but you also have to remind yourself that it might not happen. Yeah. But that would be really cool if that would happen.
Absolutely. Well, we can play one other track right now, and I'd like us to take a listen to the new album's title cut, Eyes of Oblivion. And in the lyrics, you mentioned your Oblivion aviators.
Uh-huh.
And so I've seen two pictures, and I don't know if which of these is actually the album cover. There's one that's just like a photograph of these aviators, of these sunglasses. And the other's like a painting of you wearing the sunglasses. Which is actually the album cover, or either of those?
The painting is the album cover, and the more stylized aviator photo there, that's the single cover.
So I cannot keep a pair of sunglasses to save my life. That's like the first thing that gets lost.
That's funny. I actually bought a pair of Ray-Bans 3 or 4 years ago, but I never used them because I'm so afraid to lose them. Because they're too expensive. So I end up buying these real cheap old gas station ones.
You know, I think those work just as well, really.
They do. They do the trick.
Well, tell me about this. I love the, you know, the tune is great. And just that phrase, Eyes of Oblivion. Was that a lyric that you came up with?
Yeah. I think it was just one of those things, you know, when, you know, the world is pretty shitty a lot of times. It's crap. We know it. And we're not ignoring it. But for 1 hour or even for 3 minutes, let's just put these Eyes of Oblivion on and just, you know, get lost in music. That's kind of what it is. You know, sometimes you just don't want to hear about it. You know, you're fed up, you know.
Absolutely. Well, man, Nick, thank you so much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you.
We're going to take a listen now to that title track off the new album, Eyes of Oblivion. It's due out April the 1st on Nuclear Blast Records. It's the Helicopters and Little Stevens Underground Garage. Some of the title track to their new album, Eyes of Oblivion. That was the Helicopters here in Little Stevens Underground Garage. Their album is due out April the 1st. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Nick Anderson from the band for speaking with me today. And thanks as well to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Next week, I'll be joined by Shane Callahan, frontman in the UK band The Now. They've released a debut EP called The Truth Always Comes Out in the End, and we'll find out all about it next time around on your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.